is taking place during Ramadan, one of the most revered periods in the Islamic calendar, a time not just for abstention and reflection, but to help those who are less fortunate.
Ramadan is a time when we're always thinking about our friends, our family, our neighbours, our community at large. And I think it's one of those moments when we can all gather together, especially after the last couple of years when we haven't been able to do that.
The street iftar party was first organised in June 2017, just days after the terror attack in the Finsbury Park area on Muslim worshippers during the month of Ramadan that cost one man his life and injured nine others. The public iftar was a way for communities to show solidarity and silence hatred with hope.
Tonight, we celebrate. We celebrate the achievements of the Muslim community in this area. We celebrate and thank them for all that they do, and we enjoy a wonderful iftar supper.
This is in memory of our beloved brother Makram Ali, who lost his life in this incident, unfortunately. And we are here. We want to have it every year to, you know, remember what's happened and try to bring communities together after what's happened. And this is the main idea, is to bring us together, to say to those who try to divide us and spread hatred, fear and division that you will not succeed. We are together and we will be always together. Islamophobia has no place in our society, and we should all fight it.
At a time of global disunity, one small corner of North London is showing there is another way. Amina Taylor, London.
The Journalists' Union in Damascus organized a ceremony to pay tribute to journalists who were killed in battlefields while reporting on the years-long war on Syria. Officials attending the ceremony praised the sacrifices of those journalists, who included reporters, cameramen, and employees of media outlets.
Syrian journalists had doubled the responsibility. They faced a ferocious war waged by huge media outlets on Syria. Journalists wrote their words in blood in respect of their job, homeland, and principles. We remain loyal to the blood of our martyrs.
It was unfortunately a long list of those who were killed, but a reminder of the sacrifices made for the sake of defending Syria. Families and relatives received certificates of appreciation, including one for Press TV correspondent Maya Nasser, who I proudly received it on behalf of his family.
This ceremony means a lot. It means that the martyrs are always remembered in the media outlets they work for. They sacrifice their lives for the sake of the country. We are proud of their sacrifices.
We used to miss him a lot, even when he was alive. He worked most of the time. After leaving for work for a whole month, we saw him once, and then he was killed. It's a nice gesture to honor him by the Journalists' Union.
Maya Nasser was killed by terrorists in 2012 while covering an attack on the Ministry of Defense in the Syrian capital. He was one of many journalists who was keen on being on front lines to deliver the truth and perform his duty. In Syria, tens of journalists fearlessly risked their lives, were injured or killed just to convey the truth amid a ferocious mainstream media campaign to distort the reality. Honoring those journalists underlines the crucial role the media plays in any war, especially nowadays. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to the program. You may have heard of Hurr ibn Yazid Riyahi. He was the man who blocked the way to Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and forced the Imam and his caravan to encamp in the desert of Karbala. If Hurr had not done this, the events of Ashura might have occurred in a different way, and the family and relatives of Imam Hussein might have not been captivated. Yet, despite this flagrant mistake, there was something in Hur which resulted in his salvation, namely, his politeness towards Imam Hussein's mother, Lady Fatima Zahra, greetings of God upon her. When Hur and his thousand-strong hordes blocked Imam Hussein's way, the Imam said to Hur, "May your mother mourn for your death. What do you want from us?" These words angered Hur, but he felt shy to utter any evil word about the Imam's mother. Disrespect to Lady Fatima made him say to the Imam, "I would answer to anyone else who dared to call my mother's name, but I cannot speak except good about your mother." This modesty and politeness rescued Hur. On the day of Ashura, when thousands of Yazid hordes had besieged Imam Hussein and his family and relatives, Hur took off his boots and hung them from his neck, held his shield upside down, and came to Imam Hussein with tears in his eyes. He was shivering as he wanted to repent and join the Imam's encampment. The Imam told him that God had accepted his penitence, so he fought the enemies and attained martyrdom in the way of God. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "He who has no modesty has no faith." As a matter of fact, a person who is immodest does not feel shy to do anything or utter any word. For sure, he is not a faithful. Modesty and faith are so interlinked that Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, "Modesty is the whole religion." Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "The best kind of modesty is to feel shy of your own self so that you do not take an evil step." Those who fast open the gates of divine teachings through controlling their mean desires. Thirst and hunger helps one overcome his self and causes spiritual forces to flourish. On the contrary, excessive eating and pleasures put out the light of thought and cognizance. One of the faithful called Ja'far ibn Muhammad ibn Hamza asked the 11th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, about the reason for obligation of fasting of Ramadan. The Imam answered, "Almighty God prescribed fasting so that the rich taste hunger and be kind toward the poor." The divine laws are not illogical and unwise, as God is wise. Thus, we obey God's commands whether we know the logic or not. Islam and being Muslim means submission before God's do's and don'ts. However, some of the logics of the deeds and laws are mentioned in the hadith and narrations. The Noble Quran says that fasting has been prescribed for reaching God-weariness. God-weary humans are like the trees and plants which grow in the desert. Such plants are tolerant against storms, scorching sun, and frosty winter. In the same way, fasting makes the spirit of the faithful strong against calamities. One cannot understand captivity unless he has been captive for a while. He cannot realize the sorrow of a bereaved one unless he loses a dear one. He won't understand the state of the poor unless he is hungry for a few hours. In addition to ample spiritual benefits, fasting is useful for health and well-being.
Thank you.
Some people think that they should compensate for the weight they have lost during Ramadan. Researchers have revealed that decrease of the consumed daily calorie acts as an antioxidant and helps the functioning of the brain and body. In other words, the kind of food consumed is not an index of longevity, but the amount of food. Those who eat less live longer. The most key issue during fasting is to secure the water of body. It is very important to drink at least 2 liters of water from iftar till sahari. But it is better to drink this water in intervals. For instance, at the iftar, you can drink 500 milliliters. It is better to add 1 spoon of honey to the water. It is both energizing and helps killing bacteria and fungi. Meanwhile, eating dates is very useful, especially at the time of iftar. Dates are rich with multivitamins and minerals. Eating too much food will pressure the stomach and it will damage his sleep. The foods containing vegetables and fibers are good for iftar. As it has been said before, these foods help digestion of other foodstuffs. Salad and soup are also good for iftar and after it, but it should be noted that the dressing used on the salad is better to be low fat. The foods containing carbohydrates can also be consumed between iftar and sahari. These include rice, macaroni, and bread, especially with the wheat, whose bran is not separated.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israeli military forces have raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds as worshippers gathered for dawn prayers, with medics reporting that more than 40 Palestinians were injured as a result of the raid. Local sources said some worshippers were trapped inside the mosque amid clouds of tear gas, with the regime troops throwing stun grenades at them. According to the Palestinian media, at least 43 Palestinians were injured in the raid. The development comes a day after as many as 30 Palestinians were wounded after Israeli forces continued their violent attacks against worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds. The troops used rubber bullets, tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and pepper spray against the worshippers, who have been braving increasing aggression ordered by the Israeli regime since the beginning of the holy fasting month of Ramadan.
Right now, the site of the mosque is sacred to three major religions, but the Israelis have no consideration for anyone but themselves and their own wants and desires. So right now, when they are entering the mosque, the sacred mosque, attacking people while they're praying, worshippers are there for dawn prayers, and the IDF soldiers and the settlers are simply invading the mosque, firing tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds of ammunition sometimes, all to terrorize and drive them away because they want the site completely for themselves.
The series of raids on the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one of the holiest sites in Islam, began last Saturday when the Israeli troops injured more than 150 Palestinians there. Israel's new campaign against the Palestinians doesn't stop at the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, the Israeli army carried out airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting positions belonging to the resistance groups. Similar developments last year led to an 11-day war between Israel and Gaza-based resistance groups. The conflict killed over 260 Palestinians, including scores of women and children. The Arab League broke its silence on the Israeli raids on Al-Aqsa, calling on the regime to prevent Israelis from entering the compound. In an emergency meeting in the Jordanian capital, Amman, the organization warned that Israel's actions threaten to ignite a cycle of violence, and the attacks and violations represent a blatant provocation to the feelings of Muslims. But how will such declarations help defuse the situation when, ironically, countries that have recently normalized their ties with Israel, including the United Arab Emirates and Morocco, were in attendance at the meeting? People took to the streets of the Jordanian capital, Amman, in solidarity with the Palestinians on Friday, calling on the government to expel the Israeli ambassador and scrap a peace treaty signed with the regime. Such protests have been held in several different countries, but without a unified international response to Israel, the protests are unlikely to be enough to put an end to such violations.
The international community, as you mentioned, is not doing anything about this. It's so hypocritical to see the international community condemn the things that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainians when the Israelis are doing the exact same things to the Palestinians, and their crimes are supported by the United States and other nations.
In the absence of any practical measure taken against the regime, resistance seems to be the only option.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced on Thursday that Russian forces have won the battle for the strategic southern city of Mariupol. Russian forces appear to be in control of the city, including its important but now seriously damaged port. At a joint appearance with his defense minister Sergei Shoigu, Putin declared that, quote, the completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success. The Russian president offered congratulations to Shoigu and Russian forces. But what is the strategic significance of the latest developments of the war? Mariupol is a major port in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. It is situated between areas held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine and Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that came under Russian control in 2014. Taking the city now will allow Russia to connect the two areas as it steps up its military campaign in Ukraine's east. Moscow can now secure more of the southern coastline, complete a land bridge between Russian soil and the Crimean Peninsula, and free up more troops to join the battle for Donbass, which is Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Despite Russia's announcement of victory in Mariupol, hundreds of Ukrainian troops and civilians are still holding out inside a giant steel factory in the city. Russian forces have tried for weeks to dislodge them, but to no avail. The Kremlin says there is no need for Russian troops to enter the complex passageways of the sprawling Azovstal steelworks. The Russian president ordered his forces to block off the industrial area so that, quote, not even a fly can get through. Ukraine and its Western allies have disputed Russia's claim of complete victory in the city. But Moscow seems to be already looking beyond the southern city. Russian officials say the war's main objective is now capturing the mostly Russian-speaking Donbass region. Last month, Russian forces were driven away from the capital Kiev and northern Ukraine.
Things will definitely not be smooth in the East either, as Western nations rush to funnel heavy arms into Ukraine to help it counter the offensive.
The Ukrainian armed forces were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and trained to the standards of NATO. So that is a major factor as to why the Ukrainian armed forces have put up stiff resistance to the Russian army.
U.S. President Joe Biden has announced another $800 million to help Ukrainian forces fight in the East. He said this week that Washington and its allies are moving as fast as possible to provide Kiev with the weapons that it needs. According to Biden, the U.S. and its allies are facing a critical window of time where they are going to set the stage for the next phase of this war. Much is at stake in Ukraine for major world powers. The war has been widely described as an escalation of the never-ending tug of war between the West and the Russian Federation. The outcome of the conflict could have far-reaching consequences and may shift the balance of power in the region and beyond.
The war in Ukraine is raging on. Russia's military operation in Ukraine is entering a new phase, which is focused on eastern Ukraine as the opposing troops remain locked in combat along a 300-mile front line. The Russian Defense Ministry has given the Ukrainian forces an ultimatum to lay down their arms. Ukraine has reached a preliminary agreement with Russia to evacuate civilians. But the United States and its allies seem to be determined to prolong the war. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to announce within the coming days another military aid package for Ukraine, about the same size as the $800 million one announced last week. It will include artillery systems, artillery rounds, armored personnel carriers, and unmanned coastal defense boats. It would bring the total U.S. military aid to Ukraine since the Russian military offensive in February to well over $3 billion. Kiev has called for additional weapons and support to stave off Moscow's new offensive in the eastern Donbas region, where Russian forces have been amassing after their withdrawal from the Ukrainian capital. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also said Canada would be sending heavy artillery and promised to provide more details. There are some reports that the U.S. is using the Ukraine conflict to prepare for wars against Russia and China. The U.S. military is training to fight in an environment heavily shaped by the Russian military campaign against Ukraine that was launched about 2 months ago. The purpose of this month's war game in California is to prepare for future wars against Russia and China. The report said the role players in the exercise at the Fort Irwin National Training Center in the Mojave Desert speak Russian. About 4,500 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division are pitted against the fictional Devonian forces, the exercise's apparent stand-in for the Russians. The enemy fires rockets and missiles in the drill, all while using a sophisticated disinformation campaign to make false accusations against U.S. troops.
So I think that the United States, the U.S. corporations, the U.S. government, the officials within United States politics and economics have their head on straight enough to know that an open war with Russia is against their profit motive, is against their motive for world domination, because there simply would be no world left to dominate.
The U.S. has also warned China that it will face consequences if it helps Russia evade sanctions in its invasion of Ukraine. China has so far refrained from condemning Russia for the invasion and has said Moscow's legitimate security concerns should be taken seriously. There has also been growing tensions between Beijing and Washington and its allies in the Asia-Pacific region, including over Taiwan and the South China Sea. The Pentagon and U.S. lawmakers cited countering China in passing this year's $777.7 billion defense budget.
Just days ago, Israeli occupation forces attacked Al-Quds' Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers on one of the holiest days in the Islamic calendar. Now, in a fresh bout of violence, Israeli forces have again targeted Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Dozens of Israeli military forces have stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. This is while the day before, the settlers entered the compound amid a heavy military deployment of Israeli soldiers to mark the Passover holiday and perform their own prayers. This year, the Jewish religious occasion coincides with the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan at a time when thousands of Muslims, predominantly Palestinians, usually stay at the holy site for worship, a rare convergence that will drive unusually high numbers of Jewish, Muslim, and Christian worshippers to the old city of Al-Quds. Far-right Jewish groups have even called for raids of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the Jewish Passover holiday and the offering of animal sacrifices in its courtyards, which has not occurred since ancient times. Sacred to Muslims and revered by Jews, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, has long been a flashpoint in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And it's really pushing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem. It's trying to Judaize the city of Jerusalem. And we saw them attacking completely innocent people, you know, old people, women, children. So it's not really about security for Jewish worshippers.
Palestinians in the occupied territories have reacted to the raids by the Israeli security forces by going out to the streets in support of the worshippers. Israel, meanwhile, is trying to paint a different narrative. The Western-backed media is hard at work painting the Palestinians as the aggressors, even calling the worshippers rioters and terrorists. Israel says its so-called security operation is an effort to protect freedom of worship from violent rioters desecrating the site and endangering the public, but it has a tough task since scores of videos show the opposite to be the case. Palestinians are angry on a wide variety of fronts. They are suffering immensely due to the Israeli occupation. Additionally, they are amazed at the international community's indifference to the Palestinian suffering amid the Ukraine crisis. Furthermore, the paralysis of the Palestinian leadership has added salt to their wounds, who seems unable to do anything. The resistance group Hamas, however, has described the crisis as the continuing terrorism of the occupation and its crimes, attempts to Judaize Al-Quds and to perform sacrifices in the Al-Aqsa Mosque to build its so-called temple during what they call Passover. The Gaza Strip, meanwhile, is at risk of another Israeli onslaught. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles have made an incursion into northern Gaza Strip, raising the possibility of another war.
Governments around the world need to stop supporting the Israeli aggressions against the Palestinians. And I can say myself, as a rabbi and as a Jewish person, the Jewish communities around the world have to stop supporting the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
A similar Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa during Ramadan last year sparked a military confrontation between resistance factions in Gaza, led by Hamas and Israel. Hamas has said this year Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa and its worshippers is a declaration of war. And sure enough, early on Tuesday, the Gaza Strip came under Israeli assault, reportedly after rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. This is a sure sign that another war may be in the making.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Amid the ongoing global inflation crisis, NATO heads of state and mainstream media repeat a mantra that high energy prices are a direct result of Putin's actions in Ukraine since end of February. The reality is that it is the Western sanctions that are responsible. Those sanctions, including cutting SWIFT interbank access for key Russian banks and some of the most severe sanctions ever imposed, are hardly having an impact on the military actions in Ukraine. What many overlook is the fact that they are increasingly impacting the economies of the West, especially the EU and USA. A closer look at the state of the global supply of diesel fuel is alarming, but Western sanctions planners at the US Treasury and the EU know fully well what they are doing, and it bodes ill for the world economy. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article penned by F. William Engdahl, a university lecturer and best-selling author on oil and geopolitics. The piece is titled NATO Sanctions and the Coming Global Diesel Fuel Disaster. Stay tuned for more. While most of us really think about diesel fuel as anything other than a pollutant, in fact, it is essential to the entire world economy in a way few energy sources are. The Director General of the Fuels Europe, part of the European Petroleum Refiners Association, stated recently, there is a clear link between diesel and GDP, because almost everything that goes into and out of a factory goes using diesel. At the end of the first week of Russia's military action in Ukraine, with no sanctions yet specific to Russia's diesel fuel exports, the European diesel price was already at a 30-year high. It had nothing to do with war. It had to do with the draconian global COVID lockdown since March 2020 and the simultaneous disinvestment by Wall Street and global financial firms in oil and gas companies, so-called Green Agenda or ESG. Almost on day one of Russian troop actions in Ukraine, two of the world's largest oil companies, BP and Shell, both British, stopped deliveries of diesel fuel to Germany, claiming fear of supply shortages. Russia supplied some 60 to 70% of all EU diesel before the Ukraine crisis. In 2020, Russia was the world's second largest exporter of diesel fuel behind USA, shipping more than 1 million barrels daily. Most of it, some 70%, went to the EU and Turkey. France was the largest importer, followed by Germany and UK. In France, some 76% of all road vehicles, including cars, trucks, use diesel. The EU diesel demand is far higher than in the US, as most cars also use the more economical and efficient diesel fuel. In the first week of April, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen proudly announced new sanctions against Russian energy that would begin with a ban on coal. The EU is the largest importer of Russian coal. Oil and gas, she said, would follow at a later date. That foolish move will merely boost the cost of energy already at a record high for most of the EU, as it will force oil and gas prices far higher. At the beginning of the Ukraine crisis, global stocks of diesel fuel were already the lowest since 2008, as the COVID lockdowns had done major damage to the demand-supply situation of oil and gas production. Now the stage is set for an unprecedented crisis in diesel. The consequences will be staggering for the world economy. Diesel engines have the highest engine efficiency of conventional motors. They are based on the principle of compression developed in 1897 by Rudolf Diesel. Because of their greater efficiency and greater mileage per gallon, diesel fuels almost all freight truck motors. It fuels most all farm equipment, from tractors to harvesting machines. It is widely used in the EU, almost 50% for auto fuel, as it is far more fuel efficient than gasoline engines. It is used in most all heavy mining machines, such as Caterpillar earth movers. It is used in construction equipment. Diesel engines have replaced steam engines on all non-electrified railroads in the world, especially freight trains. Diesel is used in some electric power generation and in most all heavy military vehicles. A global shortage in diesel fuel, temporary or longer term, is therefore a catastrophic event. Goods cannot be moved from container ports to inland destinations. Without diesel fuel, trucks cannot deliver food to the supermarket or anything else for that matter. The entire supply chain is frozen, and there is no possibility to substitute gasoline in a diesel engine without ruining the engine. Until the ill-conceived global COVID lockdowns of industry and transportation that began in March 2020, the demand and supply of diesel fuel was well-balanced. The sudden lockdowns, however, collapsed diesel demand for truck, transport, autos, construction, even farming. Unprofitable refineries were closed. Capacity declined. Now, as world production returns to a semblance of pre-COVID normal, diesel reserve stocks worldwide are dangerously low, especially in the EU, which is the world's largest diesel consumer, but also the USA. At the start of this year, world diesel stocks were already dangerously low, and that drove prices sky high. As of October 2022, before impact of the Ukraine crisis, diesel and related stocks in the U.S. were 21% below the pre-COVID seasonal average. In the EU, stocks were 8% or 35 million barrels below the pre-COVID average level. In Singapore, the Asian hub stocks were 32% below normal. Combined, all three regions' diesel stocks were alarmingly low, some 101 million barrels below the same point last year. Between January 2021 and January 2022, EU diesel fuel prices had almost doubled, and that before the Ukraine sanctions. There were several reasons, but primary was the soaring price of crude oil and supply disruptions owing to global COVID lockdowns and the subsequent resumption of world trade flows. To add to the problem, in early March, the Chinese Central Bank imposed a ban on its exports of diesel fuel to ensure energy security amid Western sanctions on Russia.
Add to that the recent Biden administration ban on imports of all Russian oil and gas, which in 2021 included an estimated 20% of all Russian heavy oil exports. At the same time, the EU, in its ever-ideological wisdom, is finalizing a ban on imports of Russian coal with bans on Russian crude oil, diesel fuel, and gas, reportedly to follow. On April 4th, average price per liter of diesel in Germany was 2.10 euros. On December 27th, 2021, it was 1.50 euros, a rise of 40% in weeks. Following the unprecedented USA and EU sanctions against Russia, following the Ukraine military campaign after February 24th, more and more Western oil companies and oil traders are refusing to handle Russian crude oil or diesel fuel for fear of reprisals. This is certain to escalate so long as fighting in Ukraine continues. The CEO of Rotterdam-based Vitol, the world's largest independent energy trading company, warned on March 27th that rationing of diesel fuel in the coming months globally was increasing likely. He noted Europe imports about half of its diesel from Russia and about half of its diesel from the West Asia region. That systematic shortfall of diesel is there. On April 7, David McWilliams, a leading Irish economist formerly with the Irish National Bank, sounded an alarming note. Not only is oil going up, diesel is going up, and there is a real threat diesel will run out in Western Europe over the course of the next 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe before that. We import a significant amount of our diesel. It comes from two refineries in the UK, where it's first processed. Those refineries do not have any crude at the moment, so we are basically running the economy on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis, he added. We have not just an oil crisis, we have an energy crisis, the likes of which we haven't seen in 50 years. According to him, the reason diesel stocks are so low is that the EU countries found it far cheaper to outsource oil and diesel to Russia with its huge supply. The situation in the USA is not better. For political reasons, the true state of diesel fuel crisis is reportedly being downplayed by the Biden administration and the EU. Inflation is already at 40-year highs in the US. What the unfolding global diesel fuel crisis will mean, barring a major turnaround, is a dramatic impact on all forms of truck and auto transportation, farming, mining, and the like. It will spell a catastrophe for an already failing world economy. Yet governments like the German Ampel Traffic Light Coalition, with their insane zero-carbon agenda and their plans to phase out oil, coal, and gas, or the Biden cabal, privately see the exploding energy prices as further argument to abandon hydrocarbons like oil for unreliable, costly wind and solar. The real industrial interconnected global economy is not like a game of Lego toys. It is highly complex and finely tuned. That fine-tuning is being systematically destroyed, and all evidence is that it is deliberate. Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago, but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the US and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
Japanese researchers have developed chopsticks that artificially create the taste of salt. They have done this as part of efforts to reduce high levels of sodium intake in Japan. The utensils look like a typical pair of chopsticks, but with a cable and a mini computer worn on the person's wrist. A mild electrical current transmits sodium ions from food through the chopsticks and into the user's mouth. This enhances the taste of salt, requiring less of it in food to achieve the same good taste.
To prevent severe lifestyle-related diseases or to prevent these diseases altogether, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take regularly. Japanese people tend to ingest a large amount of salt in their diet. If we try to avoid taking less salt in a conventional way, we would need to endure cutting out our favorite foods from our diet or endure eating bland food.
The chopsticks have already been clinically tested. Participants say the device enhanced salty taste of low-sodium food by roughly 1.5 times. The engineers are currently refining the chopsticks and hope to commercialize the product next year. The product was jointly developed by Meiji University professor Homei Miyashita and a beverage holding company. Miyashita is best known for his creation of a TV screen that can imitate various flavors. How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do, and there you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turn barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
The challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurs, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.